Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Janice Shortle. This is NPR News. I'm filling in for Carrie Miller this morning. We might find out more today about what happened when Russia meddled in last year's U.S. presidential election. There are two Obama administration officials scheduled to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee this afternoon. Former Acting Attorney General Sally Yates and former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper. There has already been a lot of drama surrounding Yates and Clapper's testimonies. They had been scheduled to testify in front of the House Intelligence Committee in March. But then those plans were canceled. Several sources said the White House was trying to block Sally Yates from testifying. In fact, Representative Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the House committee, said that the Trump administration had been working to keep Yates from testifying. Now, sources are saying this was because they were worried about what she would say about the Trump administration's response when Yates told them about the investigation into Trump's former national security adviser, Michael Flynn. It's pretty easy to get into the weeds when we start talking about the investigations into collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. So we, of course, have invited two experts here to help walk us through this thing and explain what we should be paying attention to right now. Tom Hamburger is a reporter for The Washington Post. He covers the intersection of money and politics. Tom, thanks so much for joining us from Washington, D.C.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
And Molly McHugh, she's a foreign policy advisor with Vienna Strategies. She's talking to us from Estonia. Molly, thanks for calling in this morning and making the time to talk to us.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. And now this is where you come in. When we start to talk about this, I want you to know you can be a part of this conversation. If you have a question about the investigations into Russian meddling in the 2016 elections, big picture questions, small potatoes questions, all of those are welcome. Give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. You could also always email us at talk@nprnews.org. Molly, I want to start with you. There's so much to this, so many complicated threads to follow when it comes to this Russia investigation. So let's start big with a recap about what happened in the 2016 presidential election, and specifically, what does it mean when the FBI says Russia tried to influence the election to help Donald Trump?
Well, all of these are very good questions. And I think you saw the intelligence reporting that came out after the election with multiple U.S. intelligence agencies saying that Russia had tried a reasonably sophisticated information operation against the United States to influence the outcome of our elections. But further, last week, when you had James Comey testifying again in the Congress, he said something fairly remarkable, which is that Russia is the greatest threat of any nation on earth, given their intention and their capabilities. And this was in the context of a hearing where people were sort of asking totally unrelated questions, and he sort of threw this out, and there was no one following up on that statement, focusing instead on very political questions. And this is really remarkable, the fact that we have the people who are in charge of monitoring and tracking threats to our country on the intelligence and on the law enforcement side, and from our military commands as well, saying that Russia presents the most significant strategic threat to the United States of America, that they are using information and influence operations against the American public, and you have almost no one in our political class or current administration addressing these issues or talking about them in a very clear and coherent way. So I think we're really starting far behind the threat that we face. And I think when you see events in Europe, including some of the sort of attacks on the Macron campaign in France, people now think they understand what the threat is. We get it. It's hacking. It's leaking. It's stuff on Facebook. It's stuff on Twitter. And that's not actually what any of this is about. And we really need to get to sort of wrap our heads around what the Russians are trying to achieve, how they are achieving it, and the ways in which Western companies and other actors are complicit to and aiding in these attacks on our public opinion and our societies.
Molly, I heard Director Comey say that, and it was chilling. It really was to hear something like that. And I wondered, you know, what the average American was thinking when they heard that he had said that. Are we supposed to be scared? What are we supposed to know about Russia? Just the average everyday person.
It's a good question. I think to begin, we need to understand the objectives from the Kremlin. And the sort of very top line objectives remain attacking the transatlantic relationship writ large. So the relationship between the United States and Europe, no matter how you define that, specifically challenging NATO and aiming toward the dismantlement of NATO as a military alliance, and then challenging the integrity of the European Union, and then sort of the ways that the European Union and the United States have worked together since World War II to build sort of security and economic architecture that manage our relationships. This is very much the Russian goal, sort of taking apart these things in a strategic way. And underneath that are a variety of ideological tools that they sort of lean on and believe in. But I think the part that's sometimes hardest to understand when you see the Kremlin supporting far-right parties and far-left parties and sort of causes over here and causes over there, people say none of this makes sense. Why would they do all these things? There is no ideological thread. The ideological thread to all of it is that they're trying to weaken our belief in our system, our belief in our institutions, our belief in our system of government, the fundamental belief that personal freedoms and democracy and representative government are the things that can guarantee our security and our prosperity moving forward. These are the things they want to take away, essentially, because they view them as a threat to their own power and their own ability to keep control of Russia.
Molly, that's a really good point. Planting that seed of doubt within us, we can't really pinpoint what it is, perhaps, that Russia may or may not be doing, just as average Americans, but something's questioning in our brain, and maybe that's the intention. Tom Hamburger, I want to bring you into the conversation right now to talk specifically. We've heard here in the States, obviously, about hacking in this election. How much evidence is actually there that we know about, or how much evidence is not there that this happened?
Well, I think it can be we'll sort of divide your question. There are two ways to answer that question. One, do we know that the Russians were interfering with our election process and attempting to interfere in a way that would help Donald Trump and harm Hillary Clinton? The answer is yes. There is a great deal of evidence that supports that, enough so that the intelligence agencies, every one of them, and unanimously, intelligence and law enforcement agencies of the United States say with high confidence they believe the Kremlin, meaning Vladimir Putin personally, was directing, initiated an operation to interfere with our elections. That's question one. The question that's behind it, which in some ways today's hearing may provide some illumination, is whether there was any collusion. Was anyone allied with President Trump or the Trump campaign working with the Russians in some way to aid and abet this effort? That's obviously a very volatile question. And it's one that these investigations that have started on Capitol Hill are tagged or assigned with to deal with. Whether they'll do so or not, we don't know yet.
That's a great point. We've got a couple things to find out, hopefully, through these hearings today. I want to go to one of our callers right now, Brian, who has a big question. He's calling in from Cloquet about this entire situation. Brian, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead with your question.
My question is kind of about the reaction. You know, the fair election is kind of one of the foundations of our democracy. And if that's not something, you know, if that's been hacked, I would have expected, you know, more than just, oh, a newspaper story about it. You know, it seems like there hasn't been any real reaction to it. It's kind of just been like a talking point.
Thanks for calling, Brian. Good question. Tom, do you want to take that one?
Yes, sure. I'd be happy to do that. I think that in some ways, the reality of the extent of this interference with the U.S. election process is, is starting to sink in. I talked with Senator Klobuchar over the weekend, who, as you know, is a member of the Judiciary Committee. She is going to be asking, actually, questions along the line of the concern raised by the caller, which is, how do we, given that this has happened, how do we protect ourselves in the future? Is there reason to believe that we didn't take sufficient steps in the past, and most important, going forward, how do we assure or protect our election system, both the security of voter rolls and the voting process, but also how do we protect ourselves from the sort of attacks that we saw during the campaign and apparently that the French saw during their recent election, from having as big an impact as they may have had in the U.S.?
Thanks so much for answering that question for our caller there, Tom. Molly, I want to talk to you a little bit about the specifics that will come up in these hearings. And what I mean by specifics are specific people, specific players in this. We're probably going to hear quite a bit about Michael Flynn, President Trump's former national security advisor. What do we know about his ties to Russia, and what do they say about his relationship to the Trump administration?
So I think Flynn will be a focus today, and has been a focus of much of these discussions from the last few weeks. And I think that in particular, you see this White House now distancing themselves from Flynn, very much willing to throw Flynn under the bus on this if they believe this will move the conversation forward and sort of away from these concerns about what Russia may or may not have been doing. But even if you look only at Flynn and not at the other pattern of relationships between members of this administration and the Trump campaign, and Russian officials, Russian businesses, and other things, even if you look only at Flynn, you see, the reason he got fired was lying about different contacts. It has since come out that he had taken money from a Turkish company that was really Turkish government money, that was really, in fact, connected to Russian money. And there was a good story in Politico a couple weeks ago sort of linking the Turkish and Russian campaigns. So there's a lot going on here that I think we're only at the beginning of. And I think people are so focused on sort of the stage zero questions. Who did Flynn talk to when? What were the goals of him talking to these things? There's much deeper questions here. I mean, we have a man who was serving as the National Security Advisor of the United States of America, who thought there was absolutely no problem taking money from foreign governments, plural, in order to give them advice and influence U.S. policy, and again, in exchange for money. This is a significant concern that he thought he could hide these relationships and that there wouldn't be any consequences to doing so. So I think even if you look only at Flynn and the activities around him, there are so many questions that need to be asked about why there has been this continual effort from this team to hide their contacts with Russian officials and Russian businesses and Russian money, and in the same time convincing the American people that this is not a threat. And, you know, answering the previous question and what Brian asked and what Tom was just saying, this is the part that's really remarkable. You know, in 2014, I think, right after the Russian invasion of Crimea, there was a poll, and it was something to the effect of 16% of Republican voters saw Russia as an ally. Everybody else saw Russia as a threat. The same question asked a couple of weeks ago found 60% almost of Republican voters viewing Putin's government as a friendly nation. This switch has been entirely managed by Donald Trump and the way that he speaks about Russia and the way that he views Putin as a potential ally for some of his projects. And the fact that you have polling coming out saying that 64% of Republican voters, even if there were significant evidence or absolute proof of collusion between the campaign and the Russian government to win the election, 64% of Republican voters think it's not that big a deal. This has made Russia and a foreign attack on our country a political issue. And that is what you're seeing in the complications in all of these hearings and why they're getting canceled and rescheduled and the attempts to sort of muddle the narrative with it was the Obama administration's fault, it was this, it was that. Russia has become a political issue in the United States, and this is so dangerous for our national security that we really need to get out of that pit.
That brings me to one of our callers. Jane is calling from St. Paul, and she has a question kind of about what's happening in D.C., kind of about this investigation and why it's going the way it's going. Jane, are you there?
Yes, thank you. I want to ask the speakers who have been wonderful, and her comments just made actually go to the point of what I was about to ask, and that is, why is there not a special investigative committee? What is stalling everyone from being able to take that step? Having been someone who followed minutely every day when I was in school, everything that took place with Watergate, I simply don't see that happening here, that we should have a special committee. That's all.
Thanks for your call, Jane. We appreciate the question. Tom, do you want to answer the question? Why isn't there a special investigator, in your opinion?
Yes, well, I think there are some comparisons to Watergate, which the caller referred to, one of which is that you have the president of the United States and his top aides in the White House essentially under a cloud, under an investigation that is ongoing by the FBI. In this case, the president's party also controls both houses of Congress, and so there has been some resistance to the idea of either a special prosecutor or a special committee or commission. Senator Klobuchar, who I mentioned a moment ago, is proposing and is part of a group of legislators who have legislation suggesting a special commission. As the caller suggests, a commission that would separate this from the politics and be sort of reliably bipartisan, engaged in fact-finding, not grandstanding, would be an obvious way to proceed. But there's a lot of resistance to that, in part because of some of the negative experiences with special prosecutors through the years. And so we'll see where this is going. At the moment, the hope for an independent or a bipartisan investigation of this really lies mostly in the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is going into this in the greatest depth. They're promising a bipartisan commitment, but there is some concern about whether there will actually be how full the investigation will be, and there are a few reasons for that.
Yeah, it goes back to that trust issue that Molly brought up earlier. Molly, in your opinion, should there be a special investigator, or should we just go with the system we have?
Well, I think for now we have to work with the system we have, and I think that you see as many actors as possible trying to force the ball forward. However, I think everyone, both parties, have essentially made it fairly clear that it will be very difficult to have a actual, fair, open assessment of what happened during the U.S. elections and before. And again, the significant thing about this is this was not really about Clinton or Trump. This was an attack on American society. You saw the same type of attack happen in France before their election. These are, in fact, attacks on our societies and the way that we think, and they're trying to change the way that we vote, whether we vote or not, and how we're viewing our choices. The fact that none of our governing elite are willing to stand up and say this is the top priority that we need to be focused on right now, we need to figure out what happened, and we need to prevent it from happening ever again, is really quite remarkable. And I think in that sense, we do need, I don't know if it's an independent investigator or a new commission. It shouldn't be something that is extremely slow and cumbersome. This is an ongoing threat to the United States of America and all of our allies. And we need to address this on a faster timeline than a really slow 10-year commission issuing a report. But we also need this to be not a partisan issue. And right now, there is nothing happening on this that seems to be not partisan.
Yeah, in this hyper-partisan time, it's hard to figure out if we can get to that point. We have a question from a caller, Ben in Minneapolis. He has a question that I've had asked to me by friends and family about this issue. Ben, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Why don't you ask your question
for us? Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I was wondering what you guys think about if it does come out in the end that there was collusion with the Russians into the election, and it turns out that it does go all the way to the top, what they think will happen. Will there be immediate impeachment? Will there be a new election? Will it just go as business as usual? I hope not.
Yeah, the where does it go from here question. Tom, what do you say to that?
Well, at the moment, it's a little it's a bit hard to know. One of the things that it seems to me, if, as your caller suggested, this went to the top and there was provable collusion between the top levels of the Trump campaign, the candidate, the president himself, and a foreign power, that would be very, very serious. At the stage that we are already examining this, the historian Doug Brinkley said a couple of weeks ago, there's a whiff of treason in the air, as he called it. So I would think that if the investigation gets to the second question that we were talking about earlier, Janice, which is the question of collusion, as opposed one, we know that the Russians were engaged in this very aggressive effort, unprecedented in the United States, at least. The second question is whether there was collusion in this effort to undermine or somehow influence the election in a way that the Russian government thought would be helpful to them. That would have a very powerful impact, and if that could indeed be proven, and indeed there were discussions with a foreign power at the time of our election, be very, very serious, and I would think it would lead to discussions of impeachment and so forth. But one of the difficulties of this kind of attack, which Molly described its unprecedented nature earlier, but it is an attack that does not use traditional weapons. Rather, it uses information, hacking, cyber investigation as a weapon. And in a sense, it's using the very aspects of our democracy, free speech, free communication, to push an agenda. And it's an uncomfortable and difficult situation for the U.S. or for legislators of both parties and in good faith to respond to, because we are not in the business of limiting communication, even if it's ostensibly coming from a foreign power. The French, just before the election on Monday, actually have a legal restriction that prevents discussion of new last-minute information just before an election. We could debate whether or not that's a good idea, a good policy to limit discussion in the media of a topic just before an election. But in the U.S., given the power and the importance of our First Amendment, I don't think such a restriction would be possible. So this attack, and there's agreement that the U.S. in effect was attacked by a foreign power this election season, but it's an attack of a different and extraordinarily clever nature, and it's one that makes responding to it also very difficult and challenging.
Listening to Tom's points there, Molly, it brings me to the question of what we're going to see in Washington, D.C. today, and perhaps question whether or not we're going to get all the answers that we need to feel like we've understood all of this. So having said that, what should we be listening to, Molly, in the questioning of Sally Yates and James Clapper today? What are we going to come to any conclusions from this?
So I think with Sally Yates, the questions, as far as I know, should be fairly specifically focused to Michael Flynn and what she had told the White House about his engagement of the Russians, when she told them why they were slow to respond to her concerns, et cetera, et cetera. But I think more broadly, what we should all be listening for is, what are the questions being asked by the senators today? Are they very still narrowly focused on Flynn? Or Flynn's activities, or are they more expansively focused on how this attack was carried out? Because yes, there is a Kremlin component to this, but there is a significant amount of data architecture involved in this type of information operation, which certainly seems to have been aligned with and coordinated with private firms that are Western-based that were using data targeting and military technology, including sort of tactics for psychological operations, to target very specific messages, not to broad swaths of voters or sort of communities, but sort of individually targeting voters with specific content. And I think this is something we really need to think about, because right after the election, there were these sort of public discussions about the information divide in the United States and how Trump voters saw a different America than Clinton voters, and how do we fix this problem? And the assumption has been that this is a matter of selection, that Republican voters view one set of information sources and the Democratic voters view a different set of information sources, and we're sort of putting ourselves into these boxes. But what we've in fact seen from some of the analysis of this targeting, and this is what the Trump campaign relied on, was basically social media targeting. Their entire campaign was run online. And what we've seen in some of this targeting is that this was not a matter of choice. This was information environment being created and put in front of us in order to make us make choices in the way that they wanted us to do, whether that be going to vote or more specifically many of their campaigns, which they have bragged about personally, with suppressing specific portions of the vote in the United States. So yes, there is a Kremlin aspect to this architecture, but this involved American companies and British companies and American campaign officials. And this is something that people are very uncomfortable looking at and acknowledging, but we should not be using military tactic information warfare against democratic societies.
Molly, thank you so much for your thoughts there. We just have a few seconds left, so I want to thank you for coming on the show. Molly Mikiu, a foreign policy advisor with Fianna Strategies. She's from Estonia. And Tom Hamburger from The Washington Post joining us from D.C. I'm Jenna Shortle. This is NPR News.